You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 9th of January, 2020. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting live today because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Good afternoon to you, Matt. How are you doing, sir?
This war has taken the Weinstein trial right off the front page. That started on Monday here in this country. And it's just very interesting. No one's talking about impeachment. No one's talking about Weinstein. Everyone's talking about Iran. It's just very convenient, that's all.
It's a huge distraction, isn't it? And it's telling, isn't it, that they all seem to be supporting Trump now. Or he seems to be getting a lot more support than he was getting before. I was listening to a stream last night, and it was being pointed out that, you know, this is him trying to appeal to a certain section of Jewry in the hopes that they aren't going to attack him when he's trying to be re-elected. What do you make of that theory, Matt?
Well, you remember, I've said that on this show 100 times, that that's exactly what he's doing. We have no institutions. We have no way to help this guy. He was all alone. He's not used to this kind of attack, this brutal attack. He's been subject to every conceivable kind of attack from the press and elsewhere over the last, you know, 3 years. And he's doing everything he can to satisfy these people, and even at the expense of alienating his own base. But now killing Iranians is probably, you know, what it takes to do that. I fear what's going to happen in the future. Then
it does. It does seem that he's really sort of been nobbled by the Zionist faction. And I mean, as you and I have both pointed out, where else is he getting these help from? He hasn't got anybody there that's friendly towards him. So he's sort of reaching out to the Zionists, and I think this was a very bad move, basically. I think this has not endeared him to his populist base, but it has endeared him to the Jews. And this is the sort of thing that people have been talking about. I've heard quite a few streams discussing it, but one thing that hasn't really been discussed is how this appears to the Iranians. So I'm very pleased with the subject that we're going to be talking about today, which is basically 10 statements from Imam Khomeini on the definite collapse of the US regime. And this comes from Khomeini's own website. Number one, some have referred to it as a termite-like decline. This has been coined by an American writer. He compares the decline of America to termite damage. That is to say, it is becoming hollow from the inside. Americans themselves have said this. This is the case in economic, social, and political areas. There are clear statistics about the condition of the US economy and its effect on the global economy, which has declined astonishingly in recent decades. There are statistics in this regard. I have written them down, but it is not necessary to get into details. American power has declined in the area of politics as well. So it doesn't really seem like the Iranians really have to do very much. I mean, what he seems to be saying here is that just the nature of America being the way that it is, it's going to eventually destroy itself. And that seems to be what we're seeing now. What do you make of that, Matt?
Well, this is the Ayatollah. This is Ayatollah Khomeini, Khomeini's successor. He is the head of state, not head of government. He has tremendous veto power. And I'm willing to say that he probably has more accurate statistics than the average American does concerning inflation and interest rates and unemployment and everything else. I like the termite-like decline. I think that termite really is not just debt, but abulia, this destruction of the will to do anything among Americans, especially white Americans. The termites, you know, they'll hollow out the wood of a house and no one even notices that that one day it can't sustain the weight anymore and it comes crashing down. And everyone's wondering what the heck happened. So that's a tremendous I love the metaphor. It's brilliant and it's absolutely correct. And when he says, you know, I don't have to go into any detail, he knows that everyone knows this, that the U.S. is a paper tiger. And so far, you know, it's proving that. This was a drone strike on an unarmed man who was brought to Iraq at the Saudis' invitation to act using the Iraqis as a mediator. They set the guy up to kill him. An unarmed man with a drone, you know, playing video games is how the U.S. This is cowardly. This is how the Americans wage war now? He knows exactly what he's talking about here.
He was on a peace mission, wasn't he? Soleimani was on a peace mission, basically, to talk about de-escalating tensions between Iran and Saudi Arabia over Yemen. It was all a scam, basically, getting him there. And then they blasted him. I mean, it was another scam that Trump came out with in his speech yesterday when he talked about how thanks to American security or American intelligence, nobody was hurt when those missiles hit the camp there, hit the base there. And that base is where the missiles came from, or where the drones came from that hit Soleimani. But the reason why there was nobody hurt is because Iran phoned up Iraq beforehand and said, we are going to hit that base. We're letting you know so you can make sure nobody's hurt, basically. It had nothing to do with America. It was Iran telling Iraq, and Iraq must have told America. It was nothing to do with American intelligence or superior security apparatus. It's just a huge embarrassment. Continuing with what Khomeini has to say here. Number two, of course, as I have mentioned frequently, liberal democracy has proved to be the ruin of the Western nations who have based their government and social system upon it. The kind of liberal democracy which is common in the West today has ruined them. It has led to social rifts, a lack of social justice, the destruction of the family unit, comprehensive and epidemic corruption, and excessive and extreme individualism. They are all ruined. So there's a good list that he comes up with there. And it's interesting that he talks about lack of social justice, because I doubt whether what he means there is anti-racism and the promotion of feminism, because he's talking about the destruction of the family unit. I think what he means by social justice here is the destruction of the family unit. That is the lack of social justice. People aren't rewarded for having children. They aren't encouraged to have children. They're encouraged to be degenerate. What do you make of this bit, Matt?
Well, let's face it. You know, Johnson's Law is one of the great social discoveries of this millennium. There's news reporters out there referring to Iran as a one-party state. I think Trump has said that. Iran is most certainly a democracy. It's not a liberal one, however. They have more functional political parties that matter than the U.S. They're the eighth in the world in terms of the number of daily newspapers and periodicals. I think 13th in the world in terms of weekly and monthly periodicals. I believe they're first or second in the world in scientific periodicals. This is a first world country. It is driving me bonkers to see Americans who couldn't find, I think about 10% of Americans can find Iran on a map, according to a recent poll, that doesn't keep them from having strong opinions on it or wanting to nuke it back into the Stone Age. This general that was murdered so cowardly, they just heard of this guy just the other day, but they're absolutely convinced that he needed to die. So Americans are ignorant. They're absolutely ignorant beyond belief. But because of our social system, they're proud of it. Everyone has a right to an opinion, whether they know anything or not. And I think also as far as social justice, I think he's also referring to the massive economic disparities among Americans that are just destroying the economy, making it so unbalanced and absurd. Iran is a free country. It's a democracy, but it's not a liberal democracy at all. You can't insult Islam. All politicians have to be Iranian, ethnically as well as nationally. So, but that's really the popular view. You try to insult Islam in the newspaper, see what happens to you. The government doesn't have to do anything. The people will do something to you. It's a legitimately representative system, and Iran is far better off economically as well as politically than the U.S.
Well, there isn't really that much difference to over here. I mean, if they're not allowed to criticize Islam, you criticize Islam over here, you're going to get accused of Islamophobia, you're going to get accused of hate speech. So that's the same over here as it is over there. But over there, they don't have Holocaust denial laws. You know, they have Holocaust revisionist conferences over there. They're quite interested in finding out exactly what happened in World War II. In a lot of instances, in a lot of areas, they actually have more freedom of speech over there than we actually have over here in Europe. And you have to have that in order to have a functioning democracy. You are supposed to be able to hear what everybody else's view is and decide on the one that gets closest to the truth. And we don't have that. We don't have functioning democracies in the West anymore because of all these laws against free speech. You know, Trump can ridicule Iran for their democracy, but at least they're allowed to talk about things. You know, you're not going to be locked up for saying there were no gas chambers or for criticizing the behavior of other races. Continuing here with the next statement he makes here. Today, liberal democracy is ridiculed around the world. The methods of implementing liberal democracy, which the US were once proud of, are being widely criticized by intellectuals from throughout the world. That is why you are witnessing the US, which enjoys atomic power, advanced technology, and large sources of money, being defeated in many parts of the world. It was defeated in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Pakistan, and in Afghanistan. It has been defeated in its confrontation against global powers, and today one can envisage other defeats for the US. And he's got a good point there, hasn't he? If you look at all those battle theatres, America has not come off well. So to think that they can take on Iran is just the height of hubris, really, isn't it?
Well, one of the main reasons I wanted to pick Khamenei's statements as the center of the show today is that, at least in the Anglosphere, we're the only ones talking like this. Very few people are talking about the utter constant defeat of the U.S. military, the corruption there, and that connection to what liberal democracy is in terms of foreign policy. You know, as far as Islam goes, remember, anti-Islam, you know, Islamophobia laws, those aren't popular. You know, this is just a way to control white people. In Iran, it's the nation. It's a popular thing. In other words, these laws in Iran are actually representative. Well, the ones, of course, in Europe are not. So that's all I meant there. But Khamenei is, you know, all these guys are supposed to do all day is think and do scholarship. They're like Plato's guardians in Iran. And it's funny how they've come. Now, I have not. I think these quotes are from different years. I think this one was 2011, I want to say, or 2012, something like that. But, you know, He's not afraid because he sees how the U.S. has been defeated all over the place. And he knows that his social system is far superior to liberalism. You know, Iran has one of the lowest suicide rates in almost the entire world. I think they're third lowest on the planet. They have the best, according to the World Health Organization, the best mental health of almost every country on the planet. And this is because they have a social system that's based on tradition. Local tradition, not on some vague so-called European values that mean absolutely nothing. So this is he knows he shouldn't be afraid, I don't think they are. This is a first world country that's been preparing for the U.S. to do this for a long time, and the U.S. isn't going to win. It can't win.
Dr. E. Michael Jones refers to them as the leader of the free world because they're not enslaved to pornography and they rejected feminism. I think you make a good point there, Matt, as well, that what we call Islamophobia laws over here in Britain, they are laws that the Iranians actually want. They're laws that they support. Well, his next statement is an interesting one as well. The policies of the greatest powers in the world have become trapped in the mud in West Asia. These policies have failed. They themselves say that this failure is because of the influence and power of the Islamic Republic. This is very important. They wanted to impose every disaster that they liked on Iraq and Syria, but they failed. Well, this is very important because this is what we wanted. This is what the revolution wanted. The goals of the revolution have been attained, but the goals of the US and its allies have not. This is just one example, and such victories, capabilities, and achievements are many. And of course, this is what Trump is saying, isn't he? He's blaming Iran for the loss of all these troops and all the rest of it. And the Ayatollah here is saying, yes, you can blame us. We are the ones who have won. You are the one who has lost. Interesting comment, I think.
Well, you know, Americans don't really know anything about it. They think that Iran is this third world poverty-stricken place, living in mud huts and is illiterate, when the exact opposite is true. The literacy rate is much higher than the U.S. It's 100%. Its scientific establishment is one of the best in the world. It's the exact opposite of what Americans think. The U.S. military, I said this many times, when they lose, they're always blaming somebody else. Oh, we don't have enough money, or it's Pakistan, or it's Iran, or it's the Russians, or it's American politicians. It's always somebody else's fault. This alleged, you know, greatest military in the world loses fight after fight, and all they do is blame everybody else and pin more medals on themselves. And he's really poking U.S. right in the eye here. This is one of the reasons that Iran has to go in the eye of both liberals. And you notice how liberals and conservatives in America are of one mind on this stuff. That wasn't the case during the Cold War, but it is when right-wing governments are being targeted. This is a threat to the U.S., not militarily, but ideologically. They're more successful than the U.S. is, especially in the social realm. And that's really what he's saying here, and he knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's supposed to be backing down. He's supposed to be making excuses, not sort of proudly saying, yes, you're quite right. We are the ones that you can blame for losing in the Middle East. He speaks about human rights next. He says they claim to support human rights. After all, human rights is loudly promoted as an American value. They are carrying the flag of human rights. But the worst actions against human rights are carried out under the protection of America. Not only do the Americans fail to confront such actions, but they also support them. In the occupied Palestinian lands, the shameless Zionist thugs have been openly trampling on the rights of the Palestinian nation for 65 years. But the Americans do not even frown at them. They even help and support the Zionists. Well, I think he's a little bit behind on what human rights actually means, because it's all about homosexuals now. I think he's a little bit behind there. He's talking about the old understanding of what human rights were, the right to actually live and not be attacked on your own land and to have sovereignty. Of course, that's all degenerated into homosexuality, feminism, drag queen story hour and all the rest of it. And I'm sure if he could see that, he would be pointing to that as well as evidence of America's failure. What do you make of this statement about the Zionists, Matt?
Well, he's taking them at their word. You know, the Americans will claim that these human rights are universal. They apply to everybody. But that's a cover story. We all know that. We all know that so-called human rights are about enshrining left liberalism as the official ideology of the Western world and imposing that by force, the barrel of a gun, both in Europe, America, and in the rest of the world, especially the Islamic world. So he's poking at them again. The fact that, you know, human rights somehow can be reconciled with Zionism, and we just had a show last month on the executive order on anti-Semitism, where this exact kind of phrasing is illegal in parts of Europe and is supposed to be illegal now, especially in universities or any place that gets federal funding today in the U.S. And because Congress couldn't pass the law, Trump forced it through. I do want to point out, though, you know, when this war started, I went back to a lot of Trump's campaign speeches. He did promise that he was going to get tough in Iran. He also promised that he was going to rebuild the American military. He promised more aid to Israel. He promised to move the embassy to Jerusalem, this kind of thing. So he did mention this during the campaign. But at least, you know, compared to Hillary, he was a peacenik. Hillary did say she was going to attack Iran immediately. The war hasn't blown out of proportion quite yet, and I think the Turks have a lot to do with that. But anyway, as far as human rights goes, I think the Ayatollah knows that even though the U.S. makes reference to this universalist conception of rights, he knows it's nonsense. He knows this is just a power grab by those special interest groups that have the government by the neck, with the homosexuals, abortionists, and the rest of it. And he knows it's all nonsense. He knows that they're using it just for their own purposes. And they do not refer to us. They don't refer to dissenters, and they never will. That was never the point of these rights, the French Revolution and the rest, in the first place.
Well, he hits out at the prison system next. And they claim to support freedom, yet there is no other country in the world whose incarceration rate is as high as that of America. America has a population of around 300 million, with the highest proportion of prison population in the world. Besides, there are fake kangaroo courts in America. Of course, in their movies and TV series, they show a different picture of the courts, courts with specific procedures. These things are only true in Hollywood productions, in the life of the movie characters. And we saw that recently playing out with that trial over Charlottesville and James Alex Fields Jr. I mean, there was no chance he was going to get a fair trial. And of course he didn't. I mean, I forget what he's got, 100 years or 300 years or something ridiculous for panicking and driving his car forward and putting it in forward instead of into reverse. I mean, that's just one instance that I can think of. But you certainly do seem to have a lot of people in prison over there, Matt. What's going on?
Well, that's exactly it. He's not just talking about the kangaroo courts. I mean, I think of poor Fields. There's so much reasonable doubt. They're all the guys from Charlottesville, Edgar Steele out in Idaho, all this stuff. I mean, he knows exactly what's happening. The TV concept of the courts has absolutely no relation to reality. Stalin had nothing on that kangaroo trial down in Virginia, and this poor guy is going to be in jail for the rest of his life unless he wins some kind of an appeal for something he clearly didn't do. We have videotape all over the place, and that doesn't matter. That's the nature of this system. But he's also referring to the fact that there's people in prison because crime is so damn high. This is what liberalism creates. When individualism is the only moral good, then you become Nietzschean overnight. The will to power is all that matters. The only right is my self-interest. How long does that take? You know, liberalism can't understand anything like a society or a social. That's accidental. Only the individual exists. Not even the family exists. When the individual exists, the social life doesn't. It got to be one or the other. Social life is an accident that comes because, you know, individuals interact in a certain way, just like atoms in the void. That's how they consider it. That's why people are in prison. That's why you have massive crime. It's like Emil Durkheim, you know, and no one's talking like that except for a handful of people like us. But that's what he means. He's not just talking about the incarceration and all that. He's talking about the cause of this incarceration.
Well, I would say the cause of the incarceration is diversity. And if you look at Iran, you can say, oh, well, there's lots of non-whites there, but they're all Shiites. They're all Shiites, and they have an ethno-state. If there's any diversity there at all, it's probably less than 1%. Next, he talks about the military. And he says, this military threat is harmful to America, and an actual war would be 10 times more harmful to America. Why are these threats harmful to America? Because they show that America is unable to confront Iran in a logical way. They do not have a discourse against the discourse of the Islamic Republic. They cannot gain an advantage in the arena of intellectual and logical confrontation. So they are forced to resort to coercion. This means that coercion is America's only logic. Except for bloodshed, America does not have any means to advance its position. And I mean, this is the same situation that we go through. You know, this is why we get deplatformed. They have to use brute force to silence us because they cannot counter our ideas. They cannot stand to have a dialogue with us because their ideas just get shown to be the foolishness that they are. What do you make of this bit, Matt?
Well, that you have the most powerful country in Central Asia saying this, the supreme leader of that country saying this, is a wonderful white pill. This is relevant in terms of foreign policy as well as domestic policy. These people know that if they really fought us in an open debate, we would shred them. Even our idiots would shred them. Not even our best. They have nothing to stand on. This system can't be defended in any rational way. It's so destructive and it's so blatantly obvious that they need all kinds of coercion, not just physical, but also psychological. Fear of losing your job and everything else. We would be better off there. And you mentioned the ethnostate. I mentioned already, if you want to run for office in Iran, you have to be Iranian. You have to be a member of that ethnic group, as well as, of course, being Islamic. You also have to be a good character, you know, the rest of it. That's the only thing that makes it non-liberal. Otherwise, it's a free country. But that just means that Iran is far better off in every way than the U.S. I do want to mention that the only major – I think I said this before – but the only major problem that Iran is facing is drug addiction, which has everything to do with the fact that they border Afghanistan, which is now controlled by the U.S. And they're pumping Iran full of drugs just like the British did to China 100 years ago. You have this very healthy society that's struggling with drug addiction. The U.S. has weaponized opiates to use against Iran as they've used against Americans. He was painfully aware of this then. He's painfully aware of this now. This is all that they can do. Drugging people, getting them addicted to pornography, consumerism, everything else. That's how you control a population. Not with prisons, not with a machine gun on every roof. And it's going to fail in Iran unless somehow they're able to topple this government somehow, paying off a few generals or whatever they did in Iraq. So, but otherwise, there's no way Iran can lose this.
Yeah, you pointed out the opiate problem in yesterday's Orthodox Nationalist, I believe. Finally, he says, the US president travels to Afghanistan, which has been occupied by tens of thousands of American and NATO troops, but he does not dare step out of Bagram Airfield, which is an American military base. He did not arrange any meetings with any Afghan statesmen in Kabul or other places. He stayed in the military base and did not step out of it until it was time to return. They are afraid of the majority of the people. They are afraid of the majority of the people of nations. Today, they are even afraid of the majority of their own people in America. I think that is a best statement because it's so true. I mean, Trump didn't step out of that air base. He wouldn't do. He knows that the Afghanis are against him. Our politicians today, they complain about being criticized on Twitter. They have all these police escorts whenever they go anywhere. I mean, you compare that to Adolf Hitler, who driving around in an open-top truck with all the adulation. Compare that to Colonel Gaddafi, again, driving around in an open truck, meeting everybody, shaking people's hands. Bashar al-Assad does the same. This Soleimani dies and millions of people are out there on the streets mourning because they love their leaders. What Western leader do we have today that inspires that sort of affection, that sort of devotion? They don't. They're terrified of the people because of what they've done, because of their slaveship to the bankers, I would suggest.
You know, I think this may be my favorite quote too, and it sums up everything he said before. Every president functions this way. If you've ever read about the security that's organized for a presidential inauguration, you'll be reading for hundreds of pages. There is a multi-billion dollar, there is an army of agents and cameras surrounding any real major presidential function in D.C. It's unbelievable and extremely expensive. There are cameras everywhere. There are security, plainclothes security everywhere. They're petrified. I could add to the Russian czars, always toward Russia, pretty much with a handful of people, sometimes incognito. They just didn't care. It didn't make any difference. This was the case in actual representative governments. If there's any proof this is not representative, not just abroad but domestically, this is it. They're petrified. They know they don't have a leg to stand on, so they have to erect this massive security state, which the anti-federalists in the late 18th century during the Constitution debate said is going to happen. It's been warned 1,000 times, but this is what happens when you're isolated, when you're enthralled to the bankers, when you're enthralled to corporate America, when you do what you're told. And Trump is no different than Bush or Obama or anybody else. They're exactly the same in this regard, and they have absolutely no freedom. People like Khamenei, people like Putin, people like Assad, they have great freedom because they know they're legitimately popular and legitimately representative.
And they don't need the surveillance state that we have here with the cameras and the listening in and the checking out what everybody was saying in their emails and holding people up on it. Well, we've got two final quotes here that actually come from one of your essays on this subject, Matt. Trump is speaking about endless airstrikes against Iranian civilians, but there are two problems, and here is the first. The forward base of USENTCOM is at the Al Udeid Air Force Base in Qatar. Since June 2017, Qatar has been a staunch ally of Iran. This is the most important USAF installation in the Mideast. Attacks cannot be carried out without forward bases. So they would have to use the Qatar airbase if they wanted to do anything at all. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, I got that from the Center for Research on Globalization. It's also been mentioned by Paul Craig Roberts and a few others that Qatar has made it very clear that they're pro-Iran. And this is where the main forward airbase is for any kind of attack. This may be the reason why you don't have any real solid organization against Iran quite yet, despite everything that's happened. Because, you know, Qatar has made it clear that they don't want the U.S. using this base. It also houses the Qatarian Air Force, which is a very elite organization. It's a very wealthy country. This is very different from, for example, the Iraqi attack in 1991.
I'll just point out that, of course, we do check out the left-wing publications, the Center for Global Research and others. We don't just look at the right-wing ones here. And the second quote: the other main USAF base is in Turkey. In fact, much of American Mideastern military operations are dependent upon Turkey. Turkey is now an ally of both Russia and Iran. US and Turkish supported rebels are fighting one another in northern Syria. In mid-December 2019, Turkey's foreign minister, Mevlut Cavusoglu, said that the United States could be barred from using two strategic air bases in retaliation to possible US sanctions against his country regarding Turkey's purchase of the Russian S-400 missile defense system. So Trump really wouldn't actually have anywhere to send his forces in from if he had gone ahead with this. I think he was counting on Iran backing down. What do you make of that, Matt?
Well, this is why it can't win. This didn't exist in 1991. Qatar was not pro-Iranian at the time. Well, actually, Iran was against Iraq, so it didn't make any difference. And now with Turkey turning on the U.S., nothing can happen in the Middle East as far as the U.S. is concerned without Turkey. They're the anchor of southern NATO. It's an absolute disaster for American foreign policy. This is why the U.S. simply can't win.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.